Chapter 7. The Moratorium on Brains. "Where have you been all this time?" Eddie Willers asked the worker in the underground cafeteria, and added with a smile that was an appeal, an apology, and a confession of despair, "Oh, I know, it's I who've stayed away from here for weeks." The smile looked like the effort of a crippled child, groping for a gesture that he could not perform any longer. "I did come here once about 2 weeks ago. But you weren't here that night. I was afraid you'd gone. So many people are vanishing without notice. I hear there's hundreds of them roving around the country. The police have been arresting them for leaving their jobs. They're called deserters. But there's too many of them and no food to feed them in jail, so nobody gives a damn anymore one way or another. I hear the deserters are just wandering about doing odd jobs, or worse. Who's got any odd jobs to offer these days? It's our best men that we're losing. The kind who've been with the company for 20 years or more. Why did they have to chain them to their jobs? Those men never intended to quit. But now they're quitting at the slightest disagreement, just dropping their tools and walking off any hour of the day or night, leaving us in all sorts of jams. The men who used to leap out of bed and come running if the railroad needed them. You should see the kind of human driftwood we're getting to fill the vacancies. Some of them mean well, but they're scared of their own shadows. Others are the kind of scum I didn't think existed. They get the jobs, and they know that we can't throw them out once they're in, so they make it clear that they don't intend to work for their pay, and never did intend. They're the kind of men who like it, who like the way things are now. Can you imagine that there are human beings who like it? Well, there are. You know, I don't think that I really believe it, all that's happening to us these days. It's happening all right, but I don't believe it. I keep thinking that insanity is a state where a person can't tell what's real. Well, what's real now is insane. And if I accepted it as real, I'd have to lose my mind, wouldn't I? I go on working, and I keep telling myself that this is Tagger Transcontinental. I keep waiting for her to come back, for the door to open at any moment, and... Oh, God, I'm not supposed to say that. What? You knew it? You knew that she's gone? They're keeping it secret, but I guess everybody knows it, only nobody is supposed to say it. They're telling people that she's away on a leave of absence. She's still listed as our vice president in charge of operations. I think Jim and I are the only ones who know that she has resigned for good. Jim is scared to death that his friends in Washington will take it out on him if it becomes known that she's quit. It's supposed to be disastrous for public morale if any prominent person quits, and Jim doesn't want them to know that he's got a deserter right in his own family. But that's not all. Jim is scared that the stockholders, the employees, and whoever we do business with will lose the last of their confidence in Tagger Transcontinental if they learn that she's gone. Confidence? You'd think that it wouldn't matter now, since there's nothing any of them can do about it. And yet Jim knows that we have to preserve some semblance of the greatness that Tagger Transcontinental once stood for. And he knows that the last of it went with her. No, they don't know where she is. Yes, I do, but I won't tell them. I'm the only one who knows. Oh, yes, they've been trying to find out. They've tried to pump me in every way they could think of, but it's no use. I won't tell anyone. You should see the trained seal that we now have in her place, our new operating vice president. Oh, sure, we have one. That is, we have and we haven't. It's like everything they do today. It is and it ain't at the same time. His name is Clifton Losey. He's from Jim's personal staff. A bright, progressive young man of 47 and a friend of Jim's. He's only supposed to be pinch-hitting for her, but he sits in her office, and we all know that that's the new operating vice president. He gives the orders. That is, he sees to it that he's never caught actually giving an order. He works very hard at making sure that no decision can ever be pinned down on him, so that he won't be blamed for anything. You see, his purpose is not to operate a railroad, but to hold a job. He doesn't want to run trains. He wants to please Jim. He doesn't give a damn whether there's a single train moving or not, so long as he can make a good impression on Jim and on the boys in Washington. So far, Mr. Clifton Losey has managed to frame up 2 men, a young third assistant for not relaying an order which Mr. Losey had never given, and the freight manager for issuing an order which Mr. Losey did give, only the freight manager couldn't prove it. Both men were fired officially by ruling of the Unification Board. When things go well, which is never longer than half an hour, Mr. Losey makes it a point to remind us that these are not the days of Miss Taggart. At the first sign of trouble, he calls me into his office and asks me, casually, in the midst of the most irrelevant drivel, what Miss Taggart used to do in such an emergency. I tell him whenever I can. I tell myself that it's Taggart Transcontinental, and there's thousands of lives on dozens of trains that hang on our decisions. Between emergencies, Mr. Losey goes out of his way to be rude to me. That's so I wouldn't think that he needs me. He's made it a point to change everything she used to do, in every respect that doesn't matter. But he's damn cautious not to change anything that matters. The only trouble is that he can't always tell which is which. On his first day in her office, he told me that it wasn't a good idea to have a picture of Nat Taggart on the wall. Nat Taggart, he said, belongs to a dark past, to the age of selfish greed. He is not exactly a symbol of our modern progressive policies. So it could make a bad impression. People could identify me with him. No, they couldn't, I said. But I took the picture off his wall. What? No, she doesn't know any of it. I haven't communicated with her, not once. She told me not to. Last week I almost quit. It was over Chick's special. Mr. Chick Morrison of Washington, whoever the hell he is, has gone on a speaking tour of the whole country to speak about the directive and build up the people's morale as things are getting to be pretty wild everywhere. He demanded a special train for himself and party, a sleeper, a parlor car, and a diner with barroom and lounge. The Unification Board gave him permission to travel at 100 miles an hour, by reason the ruling said of this being a non-profit journey. Well, so it is. It's just a journey to talk people into continuing to break their backs at making profits in order to support men who are superior by reason of not making any. Well, our trouble came when Mr. Chick Morrison demanded a diesel engine for his train. We had none to give him. Every diesel we own is out on the road pulling the Comet and the transcontinental freights, and there wasn't a spare one anywhere in the system except... Well, that was an exception I wasn't going to mention to Mr. Clifton Losey. Mr. Losey raised the roof, screaming that come hell or high water, we couldn't refuse a demand of Mr. Chick Morrison. I don't know what damn fool finally told him about the extra diesel that was kept at Winston, Colorado, at the mouth of the tunnel. You know the way our diesels break down nowadays. They're all breathing their last. So you can understand why that extra diesel had to be kept at the tunnel. I explained it to Mr. Losey. I threatened him. I pleaded. I told him that she had made it our strictest rule that Winston Station was never to be left without an extra diesel. He told me to remember that he was not Miss Taggart, as if I could ever forget it, and that the rule was nonsense because nothing had happened all these years, so Winston could do without a diesel for a couple of months, and he wasn't going to worry about some theoretical disaster in the future when we were up against the very real, practical, immediate disaster of getting Mr. Chick Morrison angry at us. Well, Chick's special got the diesel. The superintendent of the Colorado division quit. Mr. Losey gave that job to a friend of his own. I wanted to quit. I'd never wanted to so badly. But I didn't. No, I haven't heard from her. I haven't heard a word since she left. Why do you keep questioning me about her? Forget it, she won't be back. I don't know what it is that I'm hoping for. Nothing, I guess. I just go day by day and I try not to look ahead. At first I hoped that somebody would save us. I thought maybe it would be Hank Reardon, but he gave in. I don't know what they did to him to make him sign, but I know that it must have been something horrible. Everybody thinks so. Everybody's whispering about it, wondering what sort of pressure was used on him. No, nobody knows. He's made no public statements, and he's refused to see anyone. But listen, I'll tell you something that everybody's whispering about. Lean closer, will you? I don't want to speak too loudly. They say that Orrin Boyle seems to have known about that directive long ago, weeks or months in advance, because he had started quietly and secretly to reconstruct his furnaces for the production of Reardon metal in one of his lesser steel plants, an obscure little place way out on the coast of Maine. He was ready to start pouring the metal the moment Reardon's extortion gift certificate was signed. But listen, the night before they were to start, Boyle's men were heating the furnaces in that place on the coast when they heard a voice. They didn't know whether it came from a plane or a radio or some sort of loudspeaker, but it was a man's voice, and it said that he would give them 10 minutes to get out of the place. They got out. They started going, and they kept on going, because the man's voice had said that he was Ragnar Danishold. In the next half hour, Boyle's mills were razed to the ground. Razed, wiped out. Not a brick of them left standing. They say it was done by long-range naval guns from somewhere way out on the Atlantic. Nobody saw Donnischold's ship. That's what people are whispering. The newspapers haven't printed a word about it. The boys in Washington say that it's only a rumor spread by panic mongers. I don't know whether the story is true. I think it is. I hope it is.